All right, we're back in session. So, colleagues, I have some quick answers on the proposals that were made by Pastors Bethel and Haynes, and I'd just like to get this out there prior to the public testimony so that if people have comments. Number one, the Section 2 goal to affirm the PSAP members that implementation shall be added to the assessment, that is implied. That was both the intention and that is implied. So we see that as already in the agreement, and I'm stating so on the record. With regard to page 3, scope of work, this was the question of participation by PSEP at all judicial conferences. We agree to that. The city will support PSEP being at any conference before the judge. I'm stating that on the record, but I've also been asked to make it very clear that we don't get to make that decision. That is ultimately the decision of the judge, but we will support PSEP in that efforts. With regard to membership and reporting, this is something that would be developed by the committee itself with regard to its own bylaws, so we support the language. The number of committee members it currently is between 9 and 11. I will state on the record that I will appoint 11. Section 5 is no longer relevant because there are no term limits. With regard to the hiring of the community organizer, apparently I'm not the first person to say it's a good idea. The city has already said that they like that idea. There will be a program manager and administrative support. There will be community organizing capacity. In order to bring forward a specific community organizer, that would have to be offered by the committee. You can do that through me as mayor or through one of my commissioners in the ordinary budget process, and that position would have to be funded. Page 6, with regard to publishing information, unfortunately, we are not able to do that. That would make the body a public body. However, it is our understanding that PSEP would provide written reports, written updates. PSEP would provide written reports and written updates, and that would be sent to me in letter form. It would be posted online. I would certainly post it on social media, and I would assume that people would help us post that information through social media as well, but it cannot actually be posted on the city's official website. Did I get that right, Tracy, the city's?
It can't be a report to council.
I'm sorry. But it can be a letter to me?
And it can be posted on the city website.
Okay, yes.
And so if I could just add in this
please.
Bit, one of the changes, I just realized that we haven't given a strike-through underlined version, so folks may have missed that we've now got a directive within the plan. The mayor or the mayor's delegate and the Portland Police Bureau's chief or the chief's delegate shall endeavor to attend all public meetings of PSEP unless PSEP requests otherwise. Otherwise, other commissioners or their delegates are encouraged to attend unless PSEP requests otherwise. The purpose of such attendance is to listen, to understand, provide information either at the meeting or as a follow-up, and learn from PSEP members and public testimony. So we've got in there that there's a clear expectation that there will be ongoing engagement by all of the council.
Very good. Thank you, Commissioner. Page 7, where it says gather input from, and the request was that AMAC be explicitly listed. We agree, and that will require an amendment. So, colleagues, I'd like to put forward an amendment that on page 7, the sentence starting with gathering input from, it includes AMAC.
Second.
So we have a motion, and we have a second from Commissioner Fritz. We'll call that Wheeler 1. Section 9, the deliverable product, we agreed to that, and that is on the record.
But not with the timeline, right? We took out the 180 days.
I've lost Tracy again. Tracy, would you mind coming to just closer? So I can't find you back there. Sorry.
And you have to speak into the microphone, otherwise you can't get captured.
We have a giant novelty clock in the back, and it's hard to see over it.
It's now 1 year.
It's 1 year. Thank you. And that's Tracy Reeves, legal counsel. Section 9, subsection 5, we believe this is already included. The consultant has been hired to help the committee with this. So we believe that is already implied and already staffed and ready to go through the consultancy process. So that is my quick and dirty interpretation working with legal counsel on those issues. So without further ado, we'll get into public testimony. Could you remind me, Carla, how many people?
We have 14.
14? Great. We're making good time. So folks, testimony is 3 minutes. There's a little box. It lights up yellow when you have about 30 seconds left, and it goes to red and beeps when your time is up. All you need to do is state your name for the record. You don't need to give your address or anything like that. If you are a lobbyist, a paid lobbyist, then we do need to know that under council rules. And if you're here representing an organization, that's helpful too. And as always, we just ask people not to interrupt other people's testimony. Let's be respectful. Whether you like what they're saying or not, thumbs up, thumbs down is sufficient. Thank you. And we'll get to the first three.
Are Dan Handelman, Juan Chavez, and Lisa Wright?
Dan, would you like to start us off?
Yes,
thank you, sir.
Mayor Wheeler, members of council, I'm Dan Handelman from Portland Cop Watch. We appreciate the council voted unanimously on August 9 to suspend the Bureau's intended implementation of the 10x48-hour rule. While the revised directive on deadly force is much improved, there are still many concerns. Many in the community would like to see involved officers interviewed before the end of their shift or within 24 hours rather than 48 hours. We appreciate the only exception is an officer being incapacitated, but maybe you should better define that so officers can't say their emotional state is a form of incapacitation. Appropriately, clarification has been made about giving officers the Garrity warning, so any other compelled statements won't be used for criminal proceedings, but failing to answer questions could get them disciplined. Also, most references to waiting for approval from the district attorney have also appropriately been struck. The previous version proposed by the mayor split up tasks based on whether a shooting was fatal or not. The new 48-hour rule splits tasks up between on-scene responsibilities and follow-up responsibilities following departure from the incident scene. This creates a few problems.
I'm sorry, Dan.
Yes?
I'm going to cut people a little extra slack on the time.
Okay.
I would ask people to read a little bit slower because we have a translation underway.
Okay.
Thank you.
Why, thank you. So the problem by splitting it up between on-scene responsibilities and follow-up after departure include that the homicide detectives can ask the involved officer for a voluntary interview and then conduct one on-scene, but then they can also ask one afterward. So it should be made clear where the second request is if the officer declines the on-scene, if it's a follow-up, or if it's both. This is also true for witness members in the new directive. The civilian witnesses do not get interviewed until after PPB leaves the scene, the way this is written now. Witness officers are told they must submit to an audio-recorded interview before going off shift, but that doesn't appear until the following departure from the scene section. Also, even though Bureau standards are more restrictive than constitutional policing, the PSD captain is asked to decide whether to conduct further interviews after the voluntary homicide investigation. Homicide will not be asking the same questions as administrative reviewer. It would be unusual then that IA would not have more questions for an officer than what criminal investigators asked. This being an option was not in the previous draft, which also allowed PSD to ask for a voluntary statement from the involved officer. It would be a good idea to reinstate that option so that compelled testimony would not be an issue at all. The requirement for interviews to be audio recorded has been removed or made optional in a few places, and then we have details in our written testimony. There are two sections that still have professional standards filling out the use of force report instead of the officer. If the city believes the officer is being required to fill out that form violates their Fifth Amendment rights and or is concerned the officer's words will be used in the criminal investigation if they fill out the report, nothing in the current draft prevents PSD from sharing that report with the detectives, even though that was in the old version. I just have a few more things. Can I finish up? All right. witness members are no longer required to fill out use of force reports. And we're concerned that officers who are under criminal investigation might stay on paid administrative leave even if they admit to wrongdoing during an IAA interview. IAA is not supposed to share its findings until after all criminal proceedings are over, including the police review board. That means they can't share it with the police review board until after the criminal proceedings. The criminal investigations directive is constructed so that an assistant chief who would not be involved in the criminal process would sit on the PRB to prevent leaking information between IAA and homicide. The city should consider implementing this in the deadly force cases too as well. Some paragraphs were cut to prevent duplication, but there are places where things should be cross-referenced so everybody understands what their responsibilities are. So if you're the professional standards director and you go to that section, there's nothing in there about compelling testimony or protecting the information that's compelled. That's spread out throughout the rest of the document. So it'd be good to have also see section blah, blah, blah for your other duties. So it's just so it's clear.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Council.
Be kind to the translator, please.
I'll do my best.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and Council. My name is Juan Chavez. I'm here testifying on behalf of the National Lawyers Guild Portland Chapter. First, the NLG would like to thank the Mayor and the City Council for continuing to listen to the public in developing its deadly force directive. The proposal before you today is a great improvement that just needs a few amendments. First, the NLG's greatest concern centers around the interviews of involved members and witnesses. The city has provided no reason why involved members are not required to submit to an interview promptly after a deadly force incident. The community has asked for compelled testimony by the end of the shift, or at the very least within 24 hours. But the directive still allows up to 48 hours for involved member interviews. The directive also does not provide an outer time limit for when witness members must be interviewed. Lastly, the directive allows discretion in some circumstances to not audio record interviews with involved witnesses and witness members. Prompt recorded interviews are necessary. We recommend you take a look at the U.S. Department of Justice's report titled Standards and Guidelines for Internal Affairs, Recommendations from a Community of Practice, which is available online, and I believe we also provide the link in our written testimony. It says that the process of investigating an agency's members' use of lethal force requires an extraordinary degree of attention to capturing and recording the statements of each participant and witness independently, accurately, and as soon as conditions allow. It recommends that officers be compelled to submit to comprehensive, electronically recorded interviews as soon as is practical and reasonable, after an opportunity to consult for a reasonable amount of time with an attorney or a labor representative. It defines a reasonable amount of time to be as much as 3 to 5 hours or more. The guidelines state that all interviews with officers should be recorded. When discussing on-scene walkthroughs, the guidelines note that the practice of some investigators to conduct unrecorded pre-interviews of officers or witnesses prior to formal electronically recorded interviews should be discouraged. According to these guidelines, 24 hours is plenty of time to reasonably and practically interview an officer and all interviewees, including on-scene walkthroughs, and these should be recorded. With respect to the proposed amendments to the settlement agreement and to PSEP and to the PSEP plan, the NLG defers to the seasoned judgment and expertise of the AMA coalition. So we encourage the city to adopt those amendments. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Lisa Wright. I am the co-chair of the Political Action Committee for the NAACP Portland branch, and I'll be reading our statement, the letter from Joanne Hardesty today. The NAACP Portland branch appreciates the council is giving such serious consideration to the rules on investigating deadly force incidents and community involvement in the administration of the settlement agreement. We really do. It's clear that you guys are really dedicated to making sure this is a good outcome. While we appreciate the city's efforts to approve the proposed amendments, we continue to have grave concerns about two key issues. First, the timing of administrative interviews in the case of post-incident of use of force cases, and second, the elimination of the Community Oversight Advisory Board, the COAB. First, on the proposed changes to the post-deadly force procedures for the police bureau, we are pleased that the city has incorporated the guidance of the ACLU and the National Lawyers Guild to ensure separate administrative investigations with compelled testimony from the involved officer. However, we agree with Residents Bethel and Haynes, who testified on August 3rd for the AMAC, that the time period should be within 24 hours, if not by the end of shift. It is in the best interest of the community and the investigation to receive a statement as soon as possible. Second, regarding Section 9 of the settlement agreement, we are disappointed that the city continues to pursue the PSEP and the elimination of the COAB. This change has been opposed by the NAACP, AMAC, the Oregonian Editorial Board, Portland Cop Watch, and Kathleen Sadat, the former COCL, in addition to hours of testimony by Portland residents. Although it is evident that the city has attempted to incorporate feedback from the community, it has still failed to articulate its case for the elimination of the COAB instead of repairing the structural and leadership problems from the city and the police bureau. The proposed ordinance goes to great lengths to outline the timelines and culpability and the details of negotiations, but it fails to address the conclusion that the community should no longer have independent oversight of the settlement agreement. None of the findings in the ordinance, outlined in the ordinance, justify this change. In short, you have not made your case. The NAACP Portland branch asserts, as we did on August 3rd, that the proper course of action is for the city to implement the necessary fixes for the COAB.
Can you slow down a little bit, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, okay. Apologies. I'm told I talk fast. The NAACP Portland branch asserts, as we did on August 3rd, that the proper course of action for the city is to implement the necessary fixes for the COAB. Training, administrative and budgetary support, shoring up the requirements for participation by the city and the PPB, and making it easier to appoint and dismiss board members. That is what is required to repair the damage that the city caused by failing to support the COAB sufficiently to begin with and then letting it wither. Given the proposed structure, the PSEP is a pale substitute for what was originally promised in the settlement agreement. We did outline some specific concerns about the PSEP document. There's one in particular that I will mention, and you have the rest in written form for the sake of time. On page 2, there's mention of available tools and resources, which are to provide the mechanism for PSEP to independently assess the settlement agreement. This section appears to be missing, or it's not clearly labeled in the document. But it appears that it should appear between city's responsibilities and members' responsibilities. I could not find it. There are two other things that I would like, or well, let me skip here. We urge city council members to reject the creation of PSEP given the errors and omissions in the current draft. We also encourage city council to withhold a vote until the document can be further amended and distributed with adequate time for review. And there are just a couple things that I'd like to address that you've talked about in your comments today.
Can you do it relatively quickly?
Yes.
Thank you.
Just is the word implied and optional. Implied, there's a lot of implied, and y'all are not always going to be here. So your optional participation in the forming of the board is of concern because you are not always going to be the ones who are motivated to participate. And then I think there's a lot more that needs to be explicit in the proposal.
Okay, and I will ask legal counsel about that later because I believe by putting it on the record, we're giving legislative intent, but I'll clarify that later.
Okay.
I've committed a faux pas. Ordinarily, we ask if we have more than a few people signed up, if there are people with children or disabilities who'd like to come up. So if you would, thank you all for your testimony. We appreciate it, as always. I want to give preference to folks who may have small children or disabilities.
Or elder care responsibilities, too.
Elder care, yes. Mm-hmm. Very well said. Thank you. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Joe Walsh, for the record. I represent Individuals for Justice. One of the things that we're concerned about as we read through 946 was all of the mays, could be's, recommendations. You're creating a committee that has no power. And why would you do that? you're going to replace the COAB, who actually was the only one in the whole system that was created that was doing their job. They offered 100 recommendations to you and to the Department of Justice. And how many did you respond to? One. So how can you blame the COAB? There's something else wrong. Here's one of the things that were wrong. You had a chairperson being paid $100,000, and you had co-op volunteers working 40, 60 hours a week with no stipends. Nothing. They couldn't even get reimbursed. You worked their butts off. It was worse than a full-time job. And you're creating the same thing here. You're giving so much for them to do and to recommend it to you, who ignored it last time. You in the Justice Department. And God, we have a Justice Department now that's not going to push this. You know that. It's up to you. We have to trust you, who ignored it. It's outrageous, absolutely outrageous that you would do this. Why not keep the COAB? And you had 8 to 10 people on there that struggled for years. And I was part of the protest against it. I wanted it disbanded because you would not listen to them. They had no power. It's just like the IPA. Let me say something about the 48 hours. The Lawyers Guild come up with a great suggestion, and none of you have mentioned it. I was a chief union steward in the federal sector. They ran dual investigations all the time. Every time we represented somebody, we had a criminal investigation that went up to a point. Sometimes they threw it out. Sometimes they didn't. It's the law that's important. You cannot exchange information. If you let the police department do the administrative investigation and the criminal, you're asking for trouble. Think about this. They go to parties, they go to social, they talk about their cases, and if they exchange information and it goes to trial, the DA is right. Out it goes. You have to figure out a law. And the Lawyers Guild have given you a choice. It's a good choice. Give it to the auditor. It's completely separate from you guys. Let them do the administrative and let the cops do the criminal. You have to learn our trust first. And you haven't learned that. You keep doing all these things thinking that we will trust you, and we don't. You have to learn it. You have to earn it. So, thank you for taking the person with disabilities. I like the idea of Amanda also with the children. I have to remind you a lot about that. I don't know how we do this. Maybe I have a sign. What's up? I'm disabled. Let me go. Because it's a serious concern with me about the level of oxygen. If I'm here for a long time and I want to testify, there are times that I had to leave. There are people in wheelchairs that are in pain. There are people that are in crutches that are in pain. They shouldn't have to sit here for hours. So I acknowledge that you finally acknowledge it, that I had to go through your assistant to get the word to you. And I don't understand what is this confusion of not doing it. If there's more than 10 people, do it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Walsh, and please accept my apology. I did neglect to do that, and it was an oversight on my part.
Next three are Debbie Iona, Regina Hannon, and Barbara Boschinski.
Good afternoon. Thank you for being here. Would you like to start? Anybody? Why don't you go ahead and start? Thank you.
Okay. I'm Debbie Iona, representing the League of Women Voters of Portland. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on the PSEP. The League strongly recommends that all PSEP meetings be open to the public. We agree with Open Oregon, a statewide Freedom of Information coalition, that citizens benefit by, quote, having access to the process of deliberation, and government officials gain credibility by permitting the public to observe their information gathering and decision-making processes. Officials who keep their deliberations hidden from public scrutiny create cynicism and erode public trust, close quote. In light of the high degree of community concern about policing in Portland, greater transparency and participation are essential. We encourage clarifying the language around PSEP terms. It currently appears that committee members will serve only 1 2-year term. Ms. Grant explained in an email to me earlier today that's not the case. Because the PSEP will be dealing with complex issues and its members will require extensive training, we were pleased to learn members can apply to renew if they wish. We think it is important to tailor term limits policies to each volunteer committee's function and responsibilities. The community will look to this PSEP to assess the city's compliance with the settlement agreement, including implementation. The city will build trust and confidence because PSEP has the authority to offer its evaluation of the city's progress and report to the court at status conferences. We support including PSEP in the Universal Directive Review process and, over the years, have recommended consultation with the Citizen Review Committee as well. The CRC, through appeals of police misconduct cases, experiences firsthand how directives are applied to interactions between the police and community members. The Bureau would benefit from including CRC's perspective in the review process. Furthermore, the PSEP should be given the authority to also recommend to the mayor off-schedule review of directives that are in the settlement agreement when necessary. Finally, we appreciate the efforts Commissioner Fish and the mayor's office devoted to the 48-hour rule. Keep in mind, however, that OIR, the independent experts that review Portland's police shootings, recommends interviewing involved officers contemporaneously. In other words, they should be interviewed the very day or evening the shooting occurred. The city should be striving to adhere to best practices in post-shooting administrative investigations. Thank you for listening to the community, and you have been just, I was gone for the first round, and I've just been so impressed to see how responsive you've been to the concerns that you've heard from the community. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor and members of the Council. My name is Regina Hannon, and I'm with Portland Cop Watch. We want to note up front that Council was able to make some changes to the settlement agreement, apparently without pushback from the DOJ. But we have asked repeatedly that two items in the definition section of the agreement be removed to make it easier for the city to improve its oversight system. One is paragraph 61, which defines supported by the evidence by restating the CRC's deferential reasonable person standard of review. CopWatch understands Council is not ready to change that standard today, but removing the definition will free the city up to make that change without involving the federal government and the court. The other is paragraph 43, which prohibits appeals on deadly force cases. We still have serious concerns about the reworking of the COAB, including the word oversight is being dropped from the proposed name. The only change being made to the name is changing the word commission to the word committee. It seems a commission would have more authority than a committee, so this minor change indicates further disempowering of the COAB. While the new draft is far better than the original proposal, the continuation of encouraging behind-closed-door meetings, lack of broad community input into the membership, and unclear mandates mean this is still not an adequate replacement. Our key concern is the deliverable number 6 that says PSEP will spend the first year gathering information from the public and compiling recommendations for the Bureau's community engagement plan. If this means that it is the PSEP's only charge for that first year, this is not something Portland Cop Watch would support. The mayor's office assured us that the plan would only be one part of PSEP's first year of work, but we would like to see this in writing so there is no confusion. New language says PSEP will independently assess the settlement agreement, which, taken literally, means they may not be able to comment on the implementation of the agreement, which that was the number one charge for COAB as written in the agreement, paragraph 141. If the intent is for the committee to assess how the Bureau is implementing the agreement in a way that meets community expectations, this founding document should say so clearly. Similar unclear language appears in a footnote suggesting once the agreement is over, there will be no COCL anymore. PSEP should make recommendations about progress generally and on community engagement. It should specify progress towards stated goals of the agreement and enacting PSEP's recommendation. Only one of PSEP's two monthly meetings is required to be public, even though Portland Cop Watch and many others believe all the meetings should be public. At most, an executive committee that sets agendas might meet out of the public eye, but should be required to report on all deliberations at the public meetings. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you. And at the end, Mayor, I am interested in the question of should we delete that standard of evidence from the definitions? Is it necessary to have this in there? I think that was a very good point. The other comment I have for both of you is that these are going to be Portlanders who are going to be appointed to this committee, and so I think they will share your desire for open public meetings as much as possible. The way we have it worded now really means they can occasionally have a retreat or something that they would just discuss within themselves.
Well, I think there have been too many behind closed doors meetings going on in the city for a number of years, and I think that's a very serious mistake that needs to be rectified.
Very good. A couple of things. What my office stated earlier today is correct. That is not the only thing we expect the committee to do in the first year, and I will ask legal counsel if we need to clarify that. I'm certainly happy to do that if that's necessary. I will also ask the same question Commissioner Fritz asked, which is the question about the language about the reasonable standard. And I don't have a problem with that. It sounds like you're probably finding a pathway for us that we want to go towards anyway. And whether or not we need to clarify the term limits statement. I don't know if it's it seems like a lot of people are tripping over it, and I want to make sure that what we have written in plain English is easy for people to understand. So I appreciate that. And the intention, obviously, with regard to the public meetings is we do believe it is reasonable for a group to have time to strategize and think about how they want to plan public meetings without the public necessarily being there for that strategic session. But if my colleagues say no, that's fine. Keep in mind there is a balance there in terms of also attracting people who want to participate in the process. So we're trying to find a good balance that with the community meetings, with the quarterly forums, with the monthly meeting, and the discretion they have if they want to have all their meetings be in public, we think we've reached a reasonable place. So that's just so you know where we're coming from. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Council members. My name is Barbara Boschinski with Portland Cop Watch. Okay, the new plan explicitly calls for PSEP to review Bureau directives and make recommendations, as well as requiring the Bureau to tailor its policy reviews to allow PSEP to have meaningful input. PCW supports this change, but we are concerned that the new language makes it seem as if the recommendations about standard operating procedures, training, bureau culture, and other aspects not captured by the directives will not be allowed. And I'm personally very interested, consider that very important. The new document also allows...
Could we stop the time? Because I'm not sure I followed that. Could you just restate that so I understand? This isn't taking your time. I just want to make sure I understand.
Yeah. The idea is that we want to make sure that any recommendations about standard operating procedures, training, bureau culture, or other aspects that are not captured by the directives will be allowed so that we're not... And I've been thinking about this myself, you know, well, it's all well and good to find out what happens after somebody gets shot, but what can we do on the preventive?
Okay, thank you for that clarification. I appreciate it.
Yeah. The new document also allows PSEP to kick a directive up for review outside its normal review schedule, but only if it's not part of the agreement's scope. In other words, had PSEP found that the deadly force directive was allowing involved officers to wait until after the grand jury to speak to investigators after that policy had been adopted, they would have had to wait 2 years to ask for it to be fixed. PCW appreciates the example of the crowd control directive, which moved up in importance because of the on-ground clashes between police and the public. However, any existing directive or the need to create a new one should be included in this authority. And then PCW strongly supports the council that the council will hold a hearing on the community outreach plan and order amendments if needed. Instead of just three people picked by the mayor, the interview panel for prospective PSEP members will be made up of five people picked by all five council members. While this is an improvement, bear in mind that the original proposal to pick members of the COAB in the agreement was to have community meetings where people voted. There must be some way to have broader community involvement in doing outreach for and selecting members. The document states that selection may begin before the judge approves the agreement and holds a fairness hearing. This makes sense in terms of wanting to speed things up, but if for some reason the process is not found to fit the agreement, the city will have to unselect everyone and start yet again. Obviously, this would not be as much of an issue if the PSEP were simply called the COAB, in which case it would mostly still be within the scope of the agreement.
Thank you. Thanks, all three of you. We appreciate it.
The next three are Mr. W.G. Barnett, Lightning, and Philip J. Wolf.
Good afternoon, Mayor and City Council people. I'm Mr. Barnett, member of Cop Watch, and will read a statement that I understand has already been provided from Cop Watch. It is not clear that the problem of... of only dealing with certain classes of Portlanders is fixed by changing the requirement to participate in neighborhood association meetings, to consult with the Office of Neighborhood Involvement and or district coalitions, Coalition of Communities of Color, and ONI's diverse civic leadership partners. There are no organizations of houseless persons on that list or even advocates. Next. The desired effect of the PCCEP making informed recommendations will be better served by requiring meetings with members of the bodies now outlined in deliverable number 7 as optional. BHUAC, TAC, CRC, PRB, as PCCEP is required in the new document, to meet with the Human Rights Commission, the Portland Commission on Disabilities, and the new Portlander Policy Commission. Third, we earlier raised a question about the requirement for officers to attend roundtables and town halls. The new document clarifies that that the Portland Police Bureau presence is required at quarterly town halls. However, this leaves a lot of questions, including, will officers be in uniform? Could this language be interpreted as the police bureau acting as security at such meetings rather than attending to listen and answer questions if called upon? Fourth, Portland Cop Watch appreciates several minor but important changes, such as swapping out the desired outcome of policing, which exceeds the constitutional requirements, ahead of meaningful community engagement and adding improved outcomes to the list of goals. Similarly, the purpose of community engagement is now defined as, quote, leading to bias-free policing and community trust, unquote. It is appropriate, given the COCL's disconnect with this community, for PCCEP to coordinate the COCL's town hall meetings. Thank you.
My name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Super Watchdog X. I almost feel I should be a legal scholar to be discussing some of these issues, so I'll just make representation. I am not an attorney. My position is that I believe that DA Underhill, his position that he is taking, is the appropriate direction to take. I believe that we should not compel statements from officers who have used deadly force until after the DA has concluded the criminal investigation. I believe that you cannot create that firewall between administrative investigations and also criminal investigations. There's too much risk pertaining to the Soriano case. There's too much risk to the DA. Let the DA proceed forward in the direction he wants to go and understand if everything begins to fall apart, we'll be pointing in electing a new prosecutor. If everything begins to fall apart with what you're proposing from your side, I'll be pointing at the police commissioner, the mayor, and the commissioners. If you look in Chicago right now at the LaQuinn McDonald case, we're talking possibly up to 6 to 10 officers are going to be fired. Police chiefs are going to be fired. They want their mayor removed. And if you look at the compelled statements, understand it's the same thing we're discussing here. DA Underhill wanted to put this up in front of a grand jury. He wanted to transcribe the testimony and make that witness testimony transparent to the public. And the reality is that I think you're going against somebody that knows what he's doing, and it's going to jeopardize the overall outcome. And in my opinion, for you to put in a policy where you don't have nearly the experience that he does or the knowledge and act like you do, as a police commissioner going against the prosecutor, I think that's a conflict of interest, and I'm going to ask you to recuse yourself on this vote. And a reason why I think you should do that is that if these cases do begin to fall apart, like other cases have shown, you've stepped back and there's still 4 votes and they can vote it in. And then each and every one of you will be not voted for on your reelection. And that's something you should take in consideration, and also on this pay increase. If we go in the direction of DA Underhill, that $6.8 million should not be paid to the Portland police. We should look at that close and understanding we're not removing the 48-hour rule if we go with DA Underhill. So I'm asking to go with DA Underhill. I'm asking for you to recuse yourself. And I'm asking for that pay increase to be null and void, taken away. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Philip Wolf. I'm representing COAB, and I would like to thank the commissioners here for inviting me here to give this testimony, but I also want to make sure that you're awake and aware. Hello, not nodding off while I'm doing my testimony. Okay. First, I would like to say that I want to recognize the efforts that you've included in trying to improve the document. I've seen all the work that you've put into it. It's not perfected, as we know, but there is a lot of effort, and I just want to be aware of recognizing that. Also, there's a few things that I would like to address related to the police and the 48-hour rule that I'm impressed that that's going to be removed, or that's the intention. I think after our use of deadly force and after the, you know, after they finish the response, the end of their shift, they should have the within 24 hours, that conversation. I don't know that that's the best recommendation. I try to envision that in terms of suppose it was me and I had done deadly force and then I still have to continue working for the, you know, for another 24 hours. That, I feel, would be something that could have an impact on me moving forward in my activities and that it's a risk for community safety. So I feel like immediately if deadly force happens, that person should be removed, sort of given a break, suspended, taken home, whatever. I feel that needs to be a very quick action. Related with reporting to the use of deadly force, I don't know actually if it applies specifically, and if it doesn't apply, I still feel that when people look at it, there's a concern about using deadly force. Suppose a person experiences a horrible experience, it's tragic, and the police needs to be documented as quickly as possible by the police. It needs to actually put it down that this was done, you know.
Suicide.
Not a suicide. Okay, thanks. So I think that, thank you. I just wanted to say, I don't know if it's possible to apply to this to the 48-hour rule, but I wanted to emphasize my concern about how that might be happening when there's a use of deadly force, how that could create a suicide situation. Plus also, we already just yesterday, I think we've had a discussion during a meeting where I felt like the goal of for police reform is heading on the right path. But I do have some still concerns and doubts about that, how that path is going. And I feel like, you know, we need to be able to work together so that we can come to agreement to follow the appropriate path. One thing I would like to say is I would want to make sure that there are accommodations that are provided. There's nothing in here that mentions anything about accommodations in this document, in the budget, so and how that would be budgeted. Related with the selection process for the new committee, I do have a question, a sort of a general question. How are the people who are going to be responsible for the selection, who is going to pick those specific people who will be making the selections for the new committee? I think, you know, I agree with pretty much everything that other people have commented about relating to that process previous to my testimony. So I think that's all I have to say today. Okay. Oh, there was one little thing that I forgot to add.
Sure.
It was connected with the deadly force in a shooting. I'm curious how you can make sure you can divide the criminal investigation, separate it from the administrative investigation. So I'm curious what's already in place right now to make sure that happens. And I would think that needs to be documented in the proposed document.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's a really good point, isn't it? That the 48 hours is a number, but right now there has to be separation between the administrative process and the criminal one. So it's got to be possible.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The next three are Pat Adams, Thomas Etin, and Miralaviani Perez Rivera, and then there are two more after them.
Very good. And to those of you waiting for item 947, which is an historic review, a historic landmarks commission decision. I apologize. We're obviously running a little bit over on a different matter, but I would ask for your patience. We will get to you, I promise. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks for this opportunity. I followed COAB for a few years, and I went to meetings. And oh, my name is Pat Adams. Thank you. Pat.
Thanks.
And I was attended the accountability subcommittee and the mental health. And these are my observations, my advice, if you will, for the committee going forward. First of all, there's no natural conflict between the police and the community. The community needs the police, and the police are part of the community. So if there is a conflict, it comes from outside of that natural relationship. Secondly, we can't make the community safer by making the police less safe. Any solution must improve safety for both. Three, we cannot be seeking increased police accountability without also seeking increased community accountability. Our concern about racism in the police department cannot be our only focus. After all, racism in the police department is also a mirror for racism in the community. I doubt that there has ever been an officer who never abused his or her power. Police, like all people, bring their prejudices, their stresses, and their humanness to work every day. There must be a restorative justice process to heal both real and imagined transgressions against community members. Punishment is not justice, and getting rid of bad apples is a tactic, not a strategy. Lastly, officers must have a forum for their own stories of abuse at the hands of community members. For witnessing the endless abuses of the community against itself. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor and City Council. Thanks for having us again. I'm glad I made it this time. I was almost not able to, but my name is Thomas Etienne. I spoke on August 3rd. Came back to the city, military veteran, former officer. So I was able to tap away, and thank you to Stacy Brewster in your office, and I forget who from Ms. Udalley's office, Commissioner Udalley's office, and I got something from your iPhone, Mr. Mayor, just saying. So I appreciate that being received. I'll just reiterate one portion of what I wrote, paragraph number 6. So, with regards to the proposals to amend the role of the existing COAB in favor of a more independent PSEP, but with less authority, I argue that constructing yet another government-designed intervention that extends no meaningful power to an engaged community will likely fail. This view is informed not only by my past military experience, but also with due awareness and appreciation for the political landscape of America in 2017. Irrespective of party affiliation, the systemic crisis of our domestic politics is being extensively fueled by the retrenchment of public and private institutions that are failing to deliver functional services and protections for a growing number of Americans. I believe this pattern has evolved over several decades, so it's not on the shoulders of everyone in this room, but we do have some responsibility. But we're also at a point where citizens are justifiably correct in demanding reforms that specifically encode accountability mechanisms into their processes. So by my understanding, the now dormant COAB did include a meaningful degree of accountability in the form of having authority to report a Portland residents' evaluations of police reform that was being implemented under the settlement agreement. It still appears that the proposed PSEP will diminish that specific oversight capacity from the only component under the settlement agreement that guaranteed a degree of accountability to the community. So other than that, I included a few questions. And the thing that brought me back here specifically when I thought about it was like to just consider what was the risk that you had perceived that motivated you, all right, we have to change from COAB to PSIP. What was the risk to the city for justifying that? And I tried to think, I didn't really hear a convincing or persuasive explanation on that part. And in my own world, I would also ask, like, what risk do you perceive for the city if the community loses faith in police reform? And that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you, sir. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioner Saltzman, Fritz, and Udalli. I'm so glad you're there. Thank you for your service. I was fortunate, blessed, and honored to be a part of the COAB process for the full term. And what was so exciting about it is that I was actually born and raised in Portland. I'm a Portlander through and through. And I just want to say, first of all, to Amanda Fritz, because of you and your humanity, it allowed me to remain on the COAB when it was difficult. And I appreciate you. I appreciate your leadership. It's what compelled me to be a part of the Disability Leadership Academy, which was a transformative experience for me in terms of my trust with local government. And that means something deeply to me. When I was on the COAB, I got a little bit of pushback, but that's okay, because I love Portland, and I'm going to be here until the day I die. During that process, I was able to go up to the old Columbia Villa and talk to people who have been leaders in their own neighborhoods since the 80s, and they've seen a lot of things happen. I collected over 8 full-on boxes. I felt like a lawyer after a while. You know how they have to store their stuff? I mean, I was like, oh, my gosh, I have to do something with this. But today I come not as the chair of the accountability subcommittee or a community leader or anything like that. I come to say thank you. This PSEP or P-squared EP or whatever you want to call it, right?
Something else. Something
really,
else.
Yeah. It really captures fair process. You know, right out of, you know, what that means. That it really captures that. And I appreciate everybody's team that was involved in that and the vision that it took to do that. And I'm sure the guff that some of you have taken from who knows how many sides, because that's the deal in living with the, you know, in a community. There's a spectrum of people that living there. And I'm so glad that this new council is moving forward with a cornerstone of accountability, transparency, and vision. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
V, I just have to say thank you for all you taught me and for you and your mom for your stickability. I mean, it was very difficult at times. And you have been, along with Philip Wolfe and others, dedicated to the long term that we need to get a police force that everybody can trust, a police community partnership. And your diligence in showing up and your ability to represent various communities in the community was very valuable and is valuable. Thank you for coming today.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks to all three of you. And there's two more, is that correct?
Correct. Kenner
good.
Swain and Pastor J.W. Matt Hennessy.
Good afternoon. Kenner Swain, Portland resident.
Good afternoon.
And I'm not a lifelong Portlander, but I'll do my best to say a couple things. I'll be brief in any case. So I agree that, well, I should say first, I think you all have done, you've made a good faith effort to step forward toward the 21st century and maybe into the 21st century. And you do take a lot of guff and maybe don't get paid enough. And I hope that this is a step forward. I agree with the ordinance 1, 2, and 3, trust, procedural justice, effective and transparent accountability. And I agree with the United States and the city of Portland recognizing the vast majority of the city's police officers are honorable law enforcement professionals who risk their physical safety and well-being for the public good. I was never a police officer. I did teach in Chicago Teachers Union for 4 years, as close as I got. I also agree, it's not in the ordinance, that Reinhold Niebuhr said the only empirically verifiable doctrine of Christian faith is original.